We are at Angel Fire Resort in New Mexico and at the 2010 Paranormal Symposium and also Film Festival. And Michael Horn is with us, no stranger to any of us, really. Michael, how are you doing?
Jerry, I'm doing fine. I thank you for taking the time to interview me here.
Oh, well, I wanted to talk to you. First of all, you got two reasons I need to talk to you, maybe
okay.
Three or four.
All right.
First of all, I got a film.
True.
And tell us a little bit about that.
The film is The Silent Revolution of Truth. It's the documentary that we made on Billy Meier and his life, his information. And they played it for the attendees here yesterday afternoon. Yes.
And this film, how long ago did you make it?
We actually released it at the beginning of 2008. So it's a year and three quarters or so ago. And it's just
is it available as a DVD? People can order it?
Exactly. It's available primarily from my website, which is theyfly.com, T-H-E-Y-F, as in Frank, L-Y, theyfly.com.
And we enjoy your website, by the way.
Oh, good. Thank you.
You see some interesting things. And I don't think there's anybody, especially now, but with Wendell Stevens passing away, but you've been a spokesman, really, for Billy Meier. You are the premier spokesman.
Well, I have a contractual arrangement, if you will, to represent his work and information in the English-speaking world, and I love doing that. It's a volunteer basis job, and I
You're always getting accused of getting a lot of money out of it.
I know, I love it. I should just tell people that make that accusation that when in 2004, when Billy and I actually drew up a contract to do this, I said, as long as I can be free to disagree or say I don't know about something that's in the case, and that I do it voluntarily so there's no money exchanging hands between us, because people are going to accuse me of it anyhow, and it might as well not be true. This way I'm free to be who I am and still represent the material.
When was the first time you met Billy Meier?
First time I actually met Billy was in 2000. I went to Switzerland then for the first time.
It's been 10 years now.
Yeah, I guess 11 if you actually go, you know,
yeah,
2000.
Right,
you know,
right, okay. And you went over to his place in Sweden or Switzerland or wherever. Where is it?
He lives in an area that's just northeast of Zurich, about 45 minutes outside of Zurich, called Schmidt-Ruti. And I went there, as you say, first time in 2000, and I've been there 12 times altogether.
Now, how did you find out about Billy Meier?
Walked into the Bodhi Tree bookstore, which is a bookstore that is soon to disappear in Los Angeles, but a lot of, you know, metaphysical, paranormal, UFO books and things. Saw the first coffee table book that was produced by Lee and Britt Elders, who worked with Wendell Stevens. And when I looked down at those photos, they just screamed out authentic to me, and that was my beginning with the Meier case.
Now, you need to, most people know about Billy Meier. Not everyone. So you need to give a little background. He's had contact for a long time now.
Exactly, Jerry. He claims that since he was a five-year-old boy, he's been meeting voluntarily, wide awake, face-to-face, with fully human beings from another star system who have tutored and mentored him and taught him many, many things, and then also always, of course, encouraged, allowed him to do his own self-education in the world. So he's a man of, you could say, of two worlds, the world of Earth and of the universe, having had the opportunity to travel with the Pleiaren extraterrestrials to see other worlds, other star systems, supposedly also to go back and forward in time. He's now about 73 years old. His contact started when he was five, so it's 68-plus years since that began.
And when they take him forward in time or backwards, does he actually show up there, or is he looking at a screen on a ship? Or?
They actually can do both. In other words, in some cases, they simply will observe certain things that he's also able to see and even photograph. And in other cases, he's literally been, they've, with one of the extraterrestrials, he was on the ground at least a couple of times, actually, in those times in our past history, as mind-boggling as it is to contemplate.
Where did he go backwards to?
One of the trips was back to Jerusalem in 32 A.D. Another trip was, I think, 14th century France.
32 A.D. was at the time of the crucifixion?
Yes.
Was he there?
prior to that. Now, again, just for everybody's, you know, reasonable senses and all, I'm just presenting information to you that is contained in the case, and I'm not even asking you, of course, to believe it. You can read it. There's no way we can prove it, you or I. We can just try to take from it what we will. But to answer your question, he claims that he was brought back to 32 AD prior to the crucifixion, and at that time, Ascot, one of the his mentors, the second teacher, who was a woman from the Dahl universe, an adjoining universe to ours, took him and a man, a Russian man, who happened upon their encampment in the Jordanian desert by accident, and they offered him the opportunity to take this trip with them. And it was, it's, this is all transcribed. I will eventually put up a transcript on my website. It's very interesting. The man is, decides to go along, and then he kind of freaks out and throws up, and he's a little beside himself, and then he kind of pulls himself back into reality. It's an interesting story, but what happens there in 32 AD, we're told in this transcript, Meyer is able to meet and walk and talk with a man who he says was named Emmanuel, spelled with a J, and a man who knew that his name would be changed in later time to a name he would never have been called in his lifetime, Jesus Christ. And he and Meyer sat and had a bit of a conversation, which was fully transcribed and is quite interesting just to read. And one can take it or leave it as they wish.
And, in, you know, I thought of you immediately, well, not immediately, but within 48 hours of when they had the deep water horizon. Because a lot of Billy Meyer's stories, at least the ones I've talked to you about, seems to relate to our environment and what's going to happen, and it's not good.
Well, exactly. Meyer, I mean, you've said it, I'm afraid, but in 1951, Meyer was the first person that I know of who was writing about and warning about what he called unnatural climate change. He, in 58, wrote specifically about the unnatural global warming. And in both of those letters that he sent about, he talked about the damage that we were doing to our world, how it was going to produce enormous cataclysmic earthquakes, seaquakes, tsunamis, floods, blizzards, tornadoes, hurricanes, and changes in our topography. In 1976, on July 8th, I believe, well, 1976, I won't know that I've penned the date, Meyer was informed that our extraction of petroleum and natural gas from the earth, our mining of the earth's ores, would lead to tremendous earthquake damage, increased volcanic activity. The earth would, as they said, collapse in upon itself. We now know that worldwide, in addition to this year alone, Jerry, we've had over 17 earthquakes over 7.0 magnitude worldwide. That's an enormous number. And we've had a proliferation of sinkholes appearing around the world. A friend of mine in Europe did a compilation on the sinkholes. Every place from Belize, China, Guatemala, Florida, Canada, you name it, where there are sinkholes, there has been either mining and or the extraction of petroleum or natural gas from the earth.
And, during the midst of the deep water horizon, all of a sudden they had earthquake up all the way up in Canada and some sinkholes.
Well, the BP.
I guess that's on the Madrid Fault or close to it.
I guess I'm not sure.
And it goes down to the Gulf.
Okay.
And,
yes, exactly.
And as you drain out this cavity of oil, it has to go someplace.
Exactly, and this disaster in the Gulf, the information that Meyer received and recently published about it. There were, at the time that Meyer had been contacted, in, I think in late May or early June, 304 million gallons of oil did escape from the earth. We're going to have a lot of collateral damage on a number of fronts from this disaster. It will come down in the form of toxic rain, the increased methane that's being released in the seas and on the earth from the melting of the permafrost is going to damage the climate further. We will have some serious wave activity. We are now in a time historically where we, humanity, have precipitated so much damage that it's going to be a rather dramatic ride from here on.
So these beings from other worlds, and it's a specific place, I guess, really.
Mm-hmm. They claim that they originate, at least live now, in a star system that's 80 light years beyond the Pleiades that we see in the night sky. There's no life in the Pleiades in the night sky. But beyond that, by 80 light years, they claim that's where their world is.
Well, so they come here and they tell Billy Meyer these things about what's going to happen. What is the deal? Or are they just going to say, too bad, or can you change it?
Right.
Do they have a mission?
Yes. And, you know, people can argue a debate, if you will, how effective it's been to do it this way. But the whole point of giving us prophecies has been to warn us, starting long ago, of what was coming our way if we did not change the direction that we were moving our world in. So it was never to doom us that they warned us. On the contrary, it was to help us wake up, take charge of our own world, and stop doing certain things which are so destructive to our planet. Their mission was to insert this information in a way that did not absolutely convincingly establish their own existence. It was not meant to prove that they existed, but to give us everything up to just short of absolute proof, so that we would struggle with this and make it our own, whichever way we took it.
Yeah, Michael Horn, there's a little music in the background, but don't worry about it. We've tested it out, and we can hear you fine.
Perfect.
And I may have a little trouble hearing you, but the audience will hear you fine.
Okay.
When Billy Meyer first had his first contact, when was it?
In 1942, he was just 5 years old.
That was during the World War II.
Just towards the tail end there of World War II.
And when was the last time he had a contact?
I would guess, since we're sitting here speaking now on a Saturday, it could have been just this past week.
That recent?
Yeah, his contacts are ongoing. He has them just about every month for sure, at least once a month.
How do you keep track of it?
He does.
Does he let you know or what?
I find out because they will, as soon as a transcript has been made available of the contact, nowadays we've gotten a little bit more efficient so that the German language transcript can be made available to some English-speaking people who can work on translating the contacts for us. And occasionally when I'm talking to people over there, they may mention, well, Billy had a contact 3 days ago and some of this was discussed or that. Sometimes a contact contains information that's really just for him and isn't that important that we know about it.
Now, I want to ask you, which may seem like a facetious question, but I'm serious, kind of. And 1942, he had a contact. He had a contact last week or recently. They come in a craft,
yeah,
and land in his backyard someplace, or back here behind his
No, they don't need to land. There's two ways they can come, and because they do have missions that involve them being in their craft.
Do they beam him up or what?
Or they beam down now into his office, and sometimes he will go with them even these days.
They come and see him.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Yes, absolutely.
They come into his
physically
office.
Present, absolutely.
And I want to get into that in a minute, but I want to get back to my first question. From the 1942 to now, do they have different models of spacecraft? The reason I ask you is because on the Internet, there's some pictures that says Billy Meyer's spacecraft. Well, I mean, I assumed he had more than one coming to see him.
You're right. They've come in a number of different designed craft. I think there may be six variations or so that they have shown up in.
And are they male and female?
Yes, fully human, male and female, virtually indistinguishable from us, and with representatives of what we would recognize as different earthly races. Not that they are earthly, they're extraterrestrials who have the same coloration or, form of various races that we are familiar with on Earth.
And have you ever gotten, we get messages and all of this, all this important stuff, but are they... Do they have emotions and relationships?
Yes, everything. It's they marry. They have very long lives. They study numerous fields of sciences and technologies and arts. They contribute a minimum of a 2 hours a day to their own civilization as work to contribute to the greater good. And then they are free to pursue the studies in different fields, to work in different fields, to travel, to go on different missions related to their...
So that's how they support themselves? It's a community thing? Mm-hmm. Somewhat like what Billy Meyer has?
Well, in a sense, except they have moved past money in their world. And what they do, this is not, you know, this there's a fine line between what it sounds like and what it is. They have a system that is not unlike a credit card. In other words, they keep track that everybody participates and contributes of themselves. As long as a person's contributing, they can have whatever they need. Now, that put that in the context of...
Well, I mean, your detractors will say, well, that's communism.
Well, that's why I said the fine line. There's that fine line. The difference is this.
So...
Right. Here's how I perceive it. See, communism has hierarchies.
Yeah.
You know, the
yeah, right.
And they do...
Right.
The
same thing as capitalism. All of a sudden, you know...
Suddenly, where's the difference in the, you know, the hierarchies, and they have this, and you don't. Here's the thing. When you... And we have to surmise this just through thinking about it. When you live in a race, a space-traveling race that has access to free energy, has... in its history, already millennia of space traveling and their ancestors, you don't need to amass pieces of paper or gold coins, because the rule of law there is, and it's very firm and strict, as long as you are contributing, take what you need, because you're no longer thinking of how much can I amass.
I wonder if they have any slackers.
If they do, they don't partake. From what I understand, it's probably... at the absolute minimal level, but they are not going to be able to have those things that are freely available to all the people, meaning various craft and opportunities to do things. When you no longer are struggling for your livelihood and that you have what you need, then you have a natural adjustment to say, well, since I'm not in a state of lack, since nobody's taking something that's mine, I have food, I have shelter, I have transportation, I have the freedom to study anything I want, I can travel in this universe, I can be part of different missions. What is it that amassing something will give me? We're not evolved enough to yet even understand that we try to amass the excessively unnecessary and unnecessarily excessive, and then we leave it to other people who fight about it.
What happens when Billy Meyer passes away?
The body of work that needed to be transmitted and transcribed has been done. For the most part, we now have it, and it's been preserved electronically as well as in books and everything else. We don't need, at this point on Earth any longer, we won't need a prophet. We don't need somebody to come and try and straighten us, because the information of the case, the core teaching in the case, is identical to the core teaching of the six prophets before Meyer, although each of these other times it was adulterated, changed, turned into religion, and people were led astray. And that's because these people, these Pleiaren, whose ancestors also were the mentors and teachers of the previous prophets, are not perfect beings. There is no such thing. This is human beings trying to work to assist other humans to evolve, to mature, to grow spiritually in every way. So we no longer need a prophet because we have the teaching. It's now, for centuries to come, up to human beings. Do we wish to learn from this and to study it and to test it?
Michael Horn, I wish we had more time. It's thefly.com.
They fly. They fly. Yes.
They fly.
Yes.
Okay, I want to get it right on the web.
Thank
and
you.
And we have a link to it anyway.
Thank you, Jerry.
And you have all kinds of things on there. Have you ever written a book?
I haven't. I've thought about it. I actually have some that are in various states of completion, but I've made some films.
They can get a hold of this film there, right?
Yes, right through our website, and we've made everything available that people want and links to all sorts of free information.
Thanks very much.
My pleasure, Jerry.
I'm Jerry Pippin, and you've been listening to our broadcast direct from Angel Fire Resort. And, of course, it's in conjunction with the 2010 Paranormal Symposium and Film Festival. And I tell you, it's a good little place to come. If you've never been to Angel Fire, I would recommend it sometime. You don't have to be a skier, but if you are, you're going to find out they got some great slopes here. Roberta Scott's our on-location producer. Jane Swartley is our role producer. Until next time, cheers.